Now it is my privilege to introduce to you guys tonight's speaker. Her name is Janelle. She has 8 months sober. And when I asked her, you know, what was the most important thing on her recovery, her answer was the relationship that she has with God. I think that's amazing. So please help me welcome Janelle.
All right, Janelle. I'm addicted to alcohol. Take a deep breath. Okay. So, I guess I'll begin from the beginning. I was born and raised in Chowchilla, California. Not the prison, the town. It was a pretty normal life. I grew up on an almond ranch. My grandfather was a minister and a CHP officer, so I'm a preacher's kid and a cop's kid. And I always say that because I actually had a very structured life, and it was from the very beginning. And my higher power has always been a part of my life, even before I had problems with alcohol. So I feel like it gives me a little bit of an advantage, not much. I always think to myself how scary it would be to go through the things that I had gone through without knowing who God was. So that's what I think about on a daily basis. And for anyone who doesn't know who God is, this program is an awesome way to experience that. I know that there's a lot of homes here, and I was sitting there thinking about what it was like, and I was just tracing my path through all of the different homes that I've been to. One of the first ones that I went to was the Dream Center in Los Angeles. It's in Echo Park, and this was after doing things other than alcohol for the first time with my mother. And after going on about a 6-month run, I finally came clean to my grandparents. It was actually really funny because Chowchilla is very small for those who don't know, and word travels fast. So my grandpa had gotten some information through the grapevine that I was doing things that I wasn't supposed to be doing. So he had confronted me, and he asked me if I was smoking marijuana, and I said, "Oh my God, Grandpa, if only you knew. You know, like, you have no clue." But that was my first home that I was in. I made it 4 days, and that was white-knuckling it, going through all the reasons in my head why I shouldn't be there. And that fourth day, I remember the thing that pissed me off the most, it was so hilarious, is that they made me take my tongue ring out. And I remember sitting there dwelling on it for hours, like, no, they didn't make me take my tongue ring out, you know. And that was actually what made me leave, or at least that's what I thought. You know, that's what I allowed myself to believe is what made me leave. And within an hour, I was at a payphone, and I'm calling my grandma, and I was asking her, I was like, "Grandma, I have to come back home." Mind you, I'm in Echo Park in L.A., and I'm from Chowchilla. So I was like, in this environment, had no clue where I really was and what I was doing. And my grandmother, she tells me on the other line, she said, "Well, you're going to have to find your way back home or by yourself or go back to the program." So later on that night, I found my way to Hollywood Boulevard, walking, mind you. And that was the first week I was on foot in L.A., Hollywood Boulevard, the Bottoms, the Jungle. I mean, literally, 1 week I experienced all the hell that L.A. had to offer. And it's so funny because the one thing I remember about that experience is I like to say to people that are new here, that once you get a little taste of what God has for you in this program and you decide to leave it, things get really ugly. And by the end of that week, I was waving down LAPD, telling them that I'm not from here, I'm from Chowchilla. I show them my ID, and I'm like, the Chinese people are after me. So this was really what was going on in my head at the time. So mind you, there was a little bit more than alcohol involved there. You might be able to understand that, but I'm telling these cops, I'm like, Chinese people are after me, they're going to get me, and they're out to kill me, and I was dead serious. I played this back in my mind, and I could laugh about it today, but in the moment, I was dead serious. You know, I really made up this hallucination in my mind about what was going on in the world around me. And I just remember my heart stopped because the cops look at me and they're like, are you serious? You know, they're like, there are people getting murdered out here and we have to go take care of something that really matters. I mean, and they pretty much just laughed in my face. And that was a really, really rude awakening for me because in my little country mind, I was really going through something in that moment. But to them, I was just another crackhead out there, pretty much, that got lost, you know, and they didn't care. And it was really hard for me to comprehend because I always had my grandfather in my life, and he was always the one that I would go to. I had no fear growing up. You know, we used to keep our doors unlocked at night, and there was no sense of reality in my mind at that time. Shortly after that, I ended up in Salvation Army in San Francisco, and that was another home that I went to, and I made it 28 days. Right before you get off a restriction. So, I don't know what it was that time that made me leave, but leaving that place turned my life completely around. I ended up getting stuck in San Francisco in Hunter's Point for almost 2 years. I got pregnant with my first son in Hunter's Point in San Francisco. And I experienced life, oh man, I don't even know how to describe it. I was pretty much living in a little camper at the bottom of the hill in one of the worst projects in the city. And the contrast of what I knew and what I was learning lets me know today that I was really, really a sick person. You know, that it lets me know how sick my heart, my mind, and my soul really was, because I was able to allow myself to endure those conditions without even a second thought. I used to wake up every morning with one thing on my mind and go to bed at night with the same thing on my mind. I drank and used every day I was pregnant with my son. That part was very painful after the fact. You know, you're not recognizing it when you're in it, but that's the kind of person that I had become. And had you asked me that before, you know, I left Chowchilla, you would have never been able to tell me that that's the kind of woman that I would be. So, another home that came directly after the birth of my child was Jelani House. And that was about the longest stretch of time that I was able to stay clean, because my child was at risk. CWS was involved. And it's so funny because I remember when they came in the hospital, I actually didn't understand why they were there. You know, I actually felt like they were wronging me in some way. How dare you say that you're going to take my child away from me? You know, and I'm coming up with all these excuses in my mind as to why they were wrong. And not being able to even look at what I was really doing and where I was at. after CWS came and told me that they were going to take him, you know, I went into a completely different mode as a mother. However, it didn't stop me from going back out before I went in. You know, I left the hospital, and with all that dreadful information that had just been given to me, and still went out and did what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it, you know, with no sense of remorse. Because in Janelle's mind, I already had it figured out, you know, what the steps were going to be next and what I was going to do to correct the problem. After I got out of Jelani House was interesting. It taught me how to deal with other people. Because when I was out there, I pretty much stayed away from most people. I had a very small group of individuals that I associated with because I knew how ugly things could get. I was blessed enough, and I feel like that is because of who my grandparents were and because of the people who were in my life as a child that were diligently praying over me while I was out there. I believe that is the true reason why I was spared and I was able to look from the outside instead of looking from the inside, looking out. And I would see all these things taking place around me. And this is like right next to me that all this stuff is going on. But I still didn't realize that I was just like them. You know, it still didn't click in my mind that this person who I'm making all these judgments and assumptions about what's going on in their life and how could she be doing that with her life right now and what is she really up to. And, you know, I had this really, really sick way of justifying my behaviors, you know. So Jelani House taught me how to deal with people, and it taught me how to deal with a lot of pregnant women with kids, and that was off the hook. The hormones in that place were just ridiculous. I would see fights out there when I was out there that couldn't compare to some of the stuff that went on when I was in there. But one of the things that sticks out of my mind the most is one of the girls, this is where I actually started taking a look at my life a little bit differently, is I was holding my son, and one of the girls who was considered to be the top of the house was holding her 6-month-old child, talking about how she was going to wrap the phone cord around the baby's neck and kill it because her other, on the other end, wasn't cooperating in some way, shape, or form. And that's when I realized that just because I had stopped doing what I was doing didn't mean that I didn't have a lot more that I had to work on still. I started to realize that once I stopped drinking, once I stopped doing other things, that doesn't correct the problem. I don't think I fully comprehended it at that time, but that's when I started to really know that, you know, there's some things underlying issues that have led me to be where I was at that time. Shortly after Jelani House, after I completed, I lived in Sunnydale for a while. I started back on my old path as soon as my CWS case was closed. That's all it was. You know, I was doing it just for that. And it didn't take a lot of time for me to get back connected with the father of my child at that time and start right back on the path that I was on. The only difference now is that we had a roof over our head and a baby in the next room. So it's hard for me to think about that because my older son, he's not with me now. There's a family member that's raising him. And he's at the age right now in my life where he's starting to ask questions. You know, he's starting to wonder, Mom, where are you? You know, Mom, what happened? Why aren't you here? And I feel like it was one of the best decisions I could make at that time when I gave him up to my aunt, because I was right in the middle of a relapse. And I promised myself that I wouldn't do that to my son. And by the grace of God, I didn't. I'm very blessed to be in recovery today, because when your 8-year-old child asks you why you're not there and you don't have God in your life, it could get really ugly. So God is putting things into perspective for me right now in my recovery with that part of my life. I went back home for a while, attempted to go back to school. I actually went to nursing school, and that is one of the motivations that I still have today. I've always wanted to work in the medical field. My grandmother used to tell me that God had a plan for my life. And when you're young, you can nod your head yes and not really get, you know, the reality of what that means. Especially when you're raised in church, it's easy to kind of go along with what you're taught. But the difference in my life now than what it was then is that I have a God of my understanding. And that is one of the, that's why this program works. I can't even say it's one of the reasons why. That is why. That's why the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is what it is today. I truly believe that. I truly believe that it's God inspired, that for a group of individuals to take something and have it amount to what you see around you and what you see worldwide, you know, that's the God that I have in my life today. So obviously I went back out again, and this time it got real bad. I was with my mother this time around, mind you, and it got to a point where I was facing some significant time in prison, because my mother decided that she wanted to call and report her car stolen. How dare she do that after I had been gone for 2 days, right? But yeah, I saw a side of my mother that I never thought I would see. And as the lights were surrounding me, still in the stupidity that I was in, I'm thinking that it's for someone else, right? It's not for me. So I had been smart enough at that point, after having already gotten 2 DUIs, I had been smart enough to not be behind the wheel of the car. But mind you, I still had my 211 right there on the side, and as the cops come up to the door and ask me my name, I'm like, what? Really? And only God knows what would have happened had I been behind the wheel that day, but what happened next was enough to scare a little bit of sense into me. Not enough, but a little. I ended up in jail for my first time, terrified. And I'm talking to my lawyer, and she's telling me that I'm going to end up in the place that I used to look at out of my bedroom window. And I was crushed. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, oh, 4 years for the car, 4 years for the keys, and 4 years for your mom's debit card. 12 years. And I was like, are you serious? Like, the gravity of it, it doesn't really hit you, but automatically I just shut down. My mind shut down, my body shut down, you know. And I'm starting to think of, I remember my mind went to this place, and I asked myself if I would be able to see my house from the prison window. And I started questioning if my grandparents would come to visit me, because I knew they were going to be so upset. So it's so funny how your mind, you know, will take you there. But another, that's just another time that I got out of it. That scared me enough not to go back to jail again. But it didn't scare me enough to stop. And this last time around, some of you have heard my story before, but this last time around, I ended up in a place that's very close to here. It's called Oval Park. I lived in the Oval Park for almost 4 years. I used to get up in the morning and put my clothes and my belongings into a grocery cart, push it into the park, go to the store, buy my beer, come back, buy whatever else I had to buy, and commence to my day. It's been a long time since I've been on this side of town. For anyone that's new, one of the things that I had to do is I had to separate myself from my environment, from the people that I used to know completely. My wife and I just moved back from Tulare. We were living in Tulare for almost 6 months because that's the only way that I could do it without focusing on things that I shouldn't have been focusing on at that time in my life. CWS is involved in my life again today. I have a 7-month-old baby boy, and he is the light of my life. But I say that to say that this last time, the real, real ugliness, after, you know, promising to my older son and making up in my mind that I would never do that to another child, is that at the beginning of my pregnancy, I spent the majority of my first and second trimester in the Oval. And I was okay with that all over again. After everything that I had gone through, after everything that I had come from, I was okay with that. So, there's a lot of things that went on in that place. Being someone that has God in my life, it takes a totally different effect on your soul when you're looking at it from that aspect, when you're looking at it from a spiritual standpoint. I believe that everyone that's sitting in this room has a purpose. And I believe that God doesn't do things by accident. He doesn't make mistakes. So I say that because this program, it's a guideline to get to that purpose. When I take my first step, it would seem as though, you know, being in the Oval, pregnant, might be enough to recognize that you're powerless and that your life is unmanageable, but that wasn't enough for me. You know, it was a process. Recognizing my powerlessness and unmanageability, not just for the first time, but over and over and over again, has been something that has not been easy for me. I'm a person who likes to have control because I don't trust other people. Living the lifestyle that I chose to live, it's hard to trust other people. This program teaches you how to trust other people. It teaches you how to step outside of yourself. It teaches you how to let go of everything that you think you can control and reach out your hand to another individual that has gone through the same pain that you've gone through and allow them to bring some hope into your life. And it's such a blessing because God works that way for a reason. He teaches us how to love each other when we don't know how to love. And for me, being able to feel something for another person, it speaks leaps and bounds about what this program does. Because for the longest time, I didn't care about other people. I cared about myself, the person that I was with, that's it and that's all. We had each other's backs for so many years that I had wired my brain to believe that that's the way that the world works. You know, and it's not. And this program allows you to rewire your brain. And I say that because I can't be against the person who is stubborn. I would say I'm the most stubborn person in this room. It's not easy to change the way you think. And this program allows you an opportunity to do that. It allows you to take the steps that you need to change the way that you think. Not just about yourself, but about the person sitting next to you, the person sitting behind you, especially about the person who is not involved in this program. I meet a lot of people, and I think to myself, you know, God, they need 12 steps in their life. You know, and that's a matter of thinking that this program has taught me. I wouldn't have said that, you know, before taking these steps. It's just a way of living. And to me, this way of living requires, the first thing that it requires is a higher power. Some people say that your higher power could be anything. And I will not go against that. I will say that my higher power is God. And that is how I have found the most success in my recovery today. My relationship with him has grown to a place where I could have a thought or a question, and in a very short amount of time, I will either be led to the answer or the answer will come to me. And I say that with all confidence, because that's the kind of relationship that I have with my God today. And it's such a blessing to not have to question what I do anymore, because I have this power and this, I can't even call it a person, this entity that I trust in such a way that has led me from being in that place, which is the Over Park. I have my own 2-bedroom apartment today. I don't even have a job, okay? And I have my own 2-bedroom apartment. My child has everything that he could want for. Everything that he could want for. I'm in the process of going back to medical school. This is all in a matter of 8 short months. This isn't years that I'm talking about. This is months. And this is because I was able to finally give it over to him and recognize that I had absolutely no control. One of my main problems when I'm working this program, when I'm living life on life's terms, is that I always, always try to take back the reins. It never, ever fails. And one piece of advice that I could give to you is to guard your thoughts. And what I mean when I say that is that 9 times out of 10, it was my own mind that would take me out. It was my own way of thinking. It was my own way of processing information. It was my own way of associating and dealing with other people in life that allowed me to go the opposite direction. My own fears, my own resentment that ultimately would lead me out the door. And I would say that it's not an easy thing to do. I have negative thoughts every day. But I've gotten to a place where I catch myself in my negative thoughts. And that's the key to living life differently. It's so easy to think a thought, but once you get into that mode where you realize that you are the cause of your own drama in life, you kind of learn to catch yourself in it. And that's what another thing that this program has taught me, is how to catch myself in my negative thinking. Another thing this program has taught me is how to reroute those thoughts. The power of the mind is ridiculous. You know, we really don't give enough credit to the power of the human mind. This disease itself is a disease that starts in the mind and ends in the soul. So I would say to definitely, you know, guard your thoughts and then begin to work on your heart. And that's where the true change comes for me. I try every day to look at myself and what I've done throughout the day, the people that I've met. People have heard me say this before, that every person that you meet is an opportunity to add to your inventory. And I had a sponsor tell me that a long time ago, and I've kept that with me because I have to realize that every conversation that I have, every word that I say is energy that can be placed back on me in a negative way, if that's how I choose to release it. You know, and it's so easy to be negative in this negative world. It's so easy to automatically go off on people today and be selfish today and be angry today and get caught up in your own BS today. It's very, very easy to do that because this is the type of world that allows it and that actually encourages it. But if you could go the opposite direction, it's not going to be easy at first to shrug off that person that's in your face, or to say thank you and walk away to the person that just cussed you out. But you would be amazed at what begins to take place in your life and the blessings that will begin to be bestowed upon your life once you take that attitude. I would say that working with other people is the foundation of this program. You learn how to tell your story. You learn that even though it's your story and you don't think much about it, that one person in this room might have gotten just the seed that they needed to go on with the rest of their day and not drink that day. And that's what this program is about, because we're not promised tomorrow. I would say that this program teaches you how to fill your days with joy, with happiness. And it might sound like butterflies and rainbows, but it's not that. It's just a peace that comes into your heart that's indescribable. And it's a willingness to accept the negative things that happen in life and move on from them without having to ruin your life. And that's what makes the difference. There are some bad things that have happened in my recovery. There are some tremendous things that have happened in my recovery, things that would probably have caused me to go out and drink. One of the things that I've talked about recently is my father, who I have never met in my life, literally just found me on Facebook a couple of weeks ago. and he's in prison for murder. These are the kind of things that you get to take in this program and produce something good out of it instead of backtracking. I'm able to receive the man that created me, literally, on a completely different level had I not been working this program. Had I not been working this program, the letter that I got from him last week probably would have been followed with a lot of anger, hate, you know, questions that might never be answered. But today I'm able to receive it for what it is and write him back and let him know that I'm ready to have a relationship with him 28 years later. I would say that getting with yourself, the main thing that I like to say is that this program is based on rigorous honesty. I like to end with that note because we BS ourselves a lot today, and we allow ourselves to think things, say things, do things that we shouldn't do. And it's plain and simple. And at the end of the day, when you lay down your head at night, you're the only one that knows what you did, what you said, you know, who you met. And that's when the relationship with God gets real, is when you start adding rigorous honesty to your life. And when you start really evaluating the type of person that you are. I'm blessed to say that I'm able to look at myself in the mirror today. I'm able to apologize when I do something stupid. You know, I'm able to go back and rethink words that I shouldn't have let come out of my mouth and go back to that person and rectify the situation today instead of just letting it fly, because that's what's easy to do today, you know. I'm able to start taking a look at why I'm standing here today. What's really going on in my heart and my soul. Find the root of that and pluck it out. I'm able to do that with the help of my higher power today. I'm able to be a mother to my son today. A real mother. And that's the icing on top of the cake. God has blessed me with a second chance at being a mother. And this time around, I'm taking it in a completely different way. Because I'm starting to realize the gravity of the world that he's going to grow up in. And the type of man that I want him to be. And unfortunately, because of the decisions and choices that I made, it is a pretty good chance that he might have the same disease that I do. The disease of alcoholism. So it is my place and my chance to be able to implement some of these principles and steps into his life as he grows up. And that's what God has given me. I end with get real, get God, and you can get what I have. Thank you. Yeah.